hit music.
What's going on, guys? It's Post Malone.
WZND-LP, Bloomington Normal is 103.3 and WZND.com.
All my hits are right here.
Drive the lane, crosses up, Van Zula, okey-doke moving, lays it up for two, Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side, no good. But she's going to get on the rebound. Kicks it out.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now. Only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stoddeher, and Joey Dwyer with you guys. We got a great show for you tonight. And fellas, it was really warm walking in to the station tonight. 81 degrees.
Oh yeah, not only was it really warm, but it was also so humid. I was out doing a story today, and I felt so bad. I looked so unprofessional because my hair, I had it all combed back, and like I had it done, and then as soon as my hair hit the humidity, everywhere. I had like 10 inches of hair just strewn around my head, and it was nuts. So I'm excited to get back to fall weather. Like, this was a fun little novelty for, like, 2 hours. But now I'm ready for, like, 40 degree and cloudy, because that's football weather, baby.
Oh. Yeah, I caught the worst of this heat because as I was setting up in the booth, getting ready to do my producing gig, I realized I didn't have my headphones with me, which are essential with this weird setup we have now. So I had to sprint back to my apartment and back to the station. You guys saw me when I came back in. I was drenched. This was probably the most running I've done since the 2018 3A sectional at Morton Township High School when I was running track and field. That's the most cardio I've done since. So I was drenched. And then when I come in, our brilliant news and sports operations director, Maritza Navarro-Lopez, says, you know you could have taken the WZND car instead of running back. And I was just like, oh, man. It was a tough look for me.
And I've also got my car in the lot. I could have given you a ride.
Yeah,
too.
I don't know why my first instinct was
just
to run
out the door.
I
like,
was just
like,
in such a hurry. I gotta go. And yeah,
that was. But yeah, so Leo made it back on time, fortunately, and now we got a good show.
Yeah,
coming up.
We do have a really good show. We got a lot of great segments, but this first segment we are really thankful for. Talking about baseball and everything going on with the World Series, we actually got the chance to sit down with someone really cool, former White Sox, Michael Huff, who is now the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox. It was a really cool interview. It was really interesting, some of the stuff we had to say, and here's a little snip of it for you.
Talking a little bit, since you are with the White Sox organization, a lot going on with baseball, but starting a little bit with your career, as someone who was born in Honolulu, Hawaii, what made you want to pursue a career in Major League Baseball as you're only one of four Hawaiians to do so?
Well, I was that proverbial oops baby. My parents met as freshmen, fell in love, and got married, and oops, their sophomore year, they had a kid. So we weren't on the islands for that long. Dad ended up getting his master's degree at Harvard in business. Mom got her master's in education at BU. So before the age of 7, I was as far west in Hawaii and as far east in Boston as you could get. Mom was an LA Valley girl, but Dad was from Chicago area, so ended up moving back here, working for a big company called Bell & Howell back in the day, Fortune 500 company. And by the age of 40, he was basically running the whole thing, was the executive president and chief operating officer. So for me, I got back to the Midwest primarily because of family. And for both of my parents being athletes, my mom was an Olympic javelin thrower. Dad played football just for 1 year at the university, but 4 years of basketball, 4 years of track. He was about 6'4" and a half, And so the joke was that me, my brother and sister, we were all bred, not really born. And so sports was always a way of life for us. But for me, senior year in high school, I was the oldest of three. My parents were smart enough to wait a couple years before they had their next couple kids. I blew out a knee my senior year in high school. And at the same time, my sister had come down with leukemia. She's a survivor, knock on wood. But when the doctors put the knees back together, hurt it in the football season, then gave out in the basketball season, they said, you know, you should get your speed, but football and basketball are out of the question. And so I just kind of said, thanks, Mom and Dad, for making me get good grades, got into Northwestern. And my sister was the one that said, you know what, you're going to go out for baseball, aren't you? And I'm like, no, you're going to die. So I'm going to stay in Chicago and be close to you. And she's like, I'm going to be just fine. I mean, I'm going to kick this thing, no problem, but you can't play football or basketball. That kind of sucks. So promised me to go out for baseball, talked to the new coach that was going to Northwestern and was a preferred walk-on, ended up leading the team in hitting as a freshman, getting a scholarship. And next thing you know, our team is a nationally ranked powerhouse. My sophomore year, there was a recruiting class that this coach pulled together with one guy that you may have heard of, Joe Girardi. Still managing in the major leagues for the Phillies after a 10, 15 year career of catching. But Joe was our catcher. We had a pitcher that was a first round draft choice, Grady Hall from Ohio. And again, by my junior year, Joe's sophomore year, we were ranked in the top 20. And I remember vividly the coach my junior year coming up saying, hey, Mike, you know what? You've got a chance to get drafted. And I'm looking at him deadpan in the eyes like, Coach, there's no wars going on. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, for baseball. And I'm like, what? Like, we got so many guys on this team that are better than me. And he's like, no, but what you do is pretty special. Just being a little leadoff hitter, happy to take a walk, playing a really good defense and using my speed, stealing bases all the time. And lo and behold, the Dodgers drafted me my senior year. And then worked my way up through the minors and got a little cup of coffee with them. Then half a year with the Cleveland Indians, 2.5 with the White Sox, and 3 years with the Blue Jays before everybody realized I really just wasn't that good and the body was falling apart and couldn't fool any more teams.
So when you were in high school, before you blew out your knee, did you have any college offers before the injury?
I had lots of college offers. They all were for football. Again, everyone saw this, 5'11", 160-pound skinny quarterback, but also cornerback. Saw my dad at 6'4.5", 225, and everyone's like, with this dude's speed, his intelligence, and his parents like being big, mom was 5'7", like he'll grow at some point. So I had offers east, west, north, and south. A couple letters I politely just framed, like from Notre Dame and places like that. But my high school coach said, you know what, you could probably play anywhere except that top 10, top 20 programs in the nation if you grow. So it was all going to be for football until I hurt the knee during the season. And then, again, just went right into basketball. Did a bunch of recruiting trips, sort of east and west coast. Parents pushing hard academics. So visited some Ivy League schools and the places like Stanford and Georgia Tech. I knew I wanted engineering, Rice. And then when the quarterfinal, the state basketball game happened and the knee gave out, the doctors 2 days later performed the surgery and said, no more ACL, you're done with that stuff. All those scholarships kind of vanished. And with my sister, like 2 weeks prior, a week prior being diagnosed with leukemia, it was easy for me just to kind of put sports aside and kind of focus on her. But again, lucky that Northwestern had a nice new coach coming in and everything kind of fell into place. So kind of feel like there was a reason for it.
Absolutely. And looking at some of your years with the White Sox, I always am very fascinated with that early 90s era with the White Sox. Just the amount of quality players that played for them were you played with Carlton Fisk, Frank Thomas, Sammy Sosa, Tim Raines, Jack McDowell, Ozzie Guillen. How did the White Sox kind of manage to balance the players of that caliber, but also keeping their personalities under control too?
Well, that's a great question because the personalities were not always under control. If I could tell some stories about the bus rides to and from some of the plane rides, you might think a little bit differently of us. But I think the front office, Jeff Torborg initially, and then Gene Lamont tried very hard to allow the team and the people we had, the personalities, the strong personalities we had, give them their space and let them run, so to speak, knowing that everybody was coming together at the same time once the games began. But like you said, when you think about the rotation we had with Jack McDowell and Alex Fernandez and Jason Beret and Wilson Alvarez, guys in the bullpen like Bobby Thigpen and Roberto Hernandez and Scott Rudinsky, Carlton Fisk, George Bell, Frank Thomas, Ozzie, who would just talk incessantly, Tim Raines, another Hall of Famer out in left. It was interesting that somehow we were able to still kind of blend as a team when everyone got to the ballpark. And then as we left, there were small groups that still got together. So the guys still cared about each other. But you could tell sort of the Latin players kind of went one way and the brothers kind of went one way and, you know, the white guys kind of went the other way. But there were more than a few times that we were all together at a restaurant, going out to a nightclub, doing something fun. And it was, again, Hispanic, black and white all coming together and having a good time. So the coaches did a really nice job of letting the players sort of have enough rein, but then knowing when to say that's enough and pull everyone back together.
Okay. And another of those personalities, you talked about a little bit, Jack McDowell. I was reading this, that he was in a band that would be touring while he was pitching in the majors.
Yeah.
So if you heard him play, was he a better starting pitcher or a better musician?
No, he was a better starting pitcher. Now, he was a very good musician, but he was definitely a better starting pitcher. And the thing about Jack was that even though, again, of those four pitchers I just mentioned, well, the seven pitchers, he probably had the least amount of talent, but he had such a bulldog mentality and just kind of pardon my language, an F you, I'm going to go after you, coming hard inside, not afraid to hit somebody. You know, that also helped set the tempo because Alex Wilson and Jason were younger kids with tremendous talent, but a little bit you could tell deer in the headlights. But when they would see Jack just get out there, he would also be on the bench helping to stoke their fire, not, you know, giving in to any, you know, other team that we were playing or potential great hitter on the mound.
And you were talking a little bit about all the personalities you had, but what was it like to be just one of the guys on a team where you had a global superstar, whether it be Bo Jackson or when Michael Jordan joined the organization? What was it like to have that figure in the clubhouse?
It was different. The neat thing about Michael, and I'll tell a quick story, was that he was very humble and he came in understanding he was the rookie. He was the guy that was not very good. He did not know baseball. So as great as an athlete and the greatest of all time in basketball, he put his basketball kind of ego or basketball ability to the side and literally came in and said, teach me. Bo Jackson, on the other hand, came in from Kansas City. They had released him because of the hip in football. And it was interesting because he did walk into the clubhouse, even though he wasn't playing, and like eyes were on him. And he knew eyes were on him. And this was the era of the Bo Nose commercials. So, you know, he would talk a lot of smack and he would demand a lot of attention. And he had earned it playing in the two sports and winning the Heisman. Unfortunately, it was the hip. But then when he had the hip replaced and understood, you know, what his role was going to be and how he had to play, you know, he also, as big as that personality was, he never took over the clubhouse, even though he probably could have. And all of us, at when we were all healthy, was the greatest athlete of all time, not counting Michael. But he, you know, also put his ego in check, so to speak, and allowed, you know, the Hall of Famers like the Carlton Fisk to have the voice, the Cy Young Award winner like Jack McDowell to have the voice, the Frank Thomas, who was leading the team in every category. Whenever he would get on base in the sixth, seventh inning, I would be the guy that would pinch run for him and then go play left field. So, I mean, how many people can say they were the guys that pinch ran for Bo Jackson? You can see one of them is right here, Michael Huff, who you're talking to. And the other fun story with Michael Jordan was it was that winter after 93, a bunch of us had injuries in 92. Myself was the opening day right fielder. Came back, surgery on the shoulder. 93, Ellis Burks is there. Not a whole lot of playing time. A couple months in the minors just to get some at-bats. Ellis Burks leaves after 93. We lose to the Blue Jays, but we're excited. 94, we're going to be even better, picking up Julio Franco. And then get a phone call from Jerry Reinsdorf and Ron Shuler saying, hey, we need you to teach someone how to catch and throw a baseball. And I kind of pause, and I'm like, isn't that my job? Like, I like being an outfielder with the White Sox, and I'm really good at catching and throwing a baseball. Can you tell me who it is? And they're like, no, not right now. I'm like, well, I know the guys in AAA because I was there for a couple months, and we have this one kid in A-ball, Mike Cameron. He's going to be good, but he's not ready. Are you making a trade for someone? They're like, no, no, but Michael, will you come down to the ballpark this winter and work out and teach this guy how to catch and throw? We'll tell you next week if who it is. And I said, sure. Ended up being Michael Jordan. And so those 2 months of pre-spring training, sort of, you know, December, January, a little bit of February, 3 days a week at the ballpark, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, sort of 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning until 1 o'clock, where we would hit at the ballpark. Bill Melton would come in a little bit and work with him on hitting. We would go over to IIT, open up a couple gyms where I could run him through outfield drills. And again, during that time, probably took me 2 weeks before I got comfortable enough calling him MJ. I think every time it was Mr. Jordan, you're not doing this quite right. He's like, no, no, it's MJ. I'm like, no, it's Mr. Jordan. But even then he was like, look, I know I suck and you're the professional. I am the rookie. You're the veteran. You know, I am ugly. You're pretty. I am bad. You're good. Whatever the analogy was, he was saying it to try to get me to relax enough to understand that he was putting his ego aside and really wanting to learn how to catch and throw and really wanting to play baseball.
And he was saying with it, with Michael Jordan and the way he was able to compose himself, we've seen it a little bit in The Last Dance, how he struggled a little bit as a hitter at the plate, given he doesn't have a baseball background. So how was he able to keep his composure with fans kind of booing at him, like, wow, you stink, you shouldn't be on the baseball field, you should go back to basketball?
Well, again, The Last Dance was so much fun. And for those listening, episode 7, if you look in the background, you'll see Michael Huff in about 4 or 5 different shots, both indoors and at spring training. I think Michael got booed so much from college and the pros when he would go on the road that he understood the reason why people were booing wasn't necessarily because he's beating his wife or he's, you know, doing something to his kids. It's like he's just doing something bad that they don't like him and they want him to do better. They expect more from him. What's ironic is that as much as people talk about the struggles hitting-wise, which, again, when you hit 200, that's not that good, but people forget that that league that he went to was Double-A. Of the three Double-A leagues, that is typically known as the most talented Double-A league of all the three. And he still had 50 RBIs, which if you look at every roster on every team that year, I'll bet there was only 3 guys that had 50 RBIs on every other team. And those are all guys that were All-American, All-State baseball players. He had over 30 stolen bases. And again, if you look at the 12 teams, there was probably one guy, maybe two, that had 30 stolen bases or more. So as bad as the batting average was, he still was able to produce in some way, shape, or form. And he actually went out to the fall and hit 250. Again, the fall is a little more relaxed. I think it would have been very interesting to see what would have happened the next year in AAA. And in my mind's eye, if knowing Michael and again that winter and then the following winter working out with him, if he had hit 200 and maybe only had 40 RBIs and maybe had like 20 stolen bases with like 15 caught stealings, he would have said no to a call-up. But if he had gone to AAA and hit 225, 230 and went from 50 to 60 RBIs and maybe from 30 to 40 stolen bases, I mean, there's a lot of guys that get called up from AAA that don't have numbers that good. So, you know, he was clearly getting there. The one thing I kept saying to him is, you know, just you're old. You know, no offense. You know, you're kind of old to start over again. And if you take the normal progression of 3-4 years to get into that type of shape, you're now going to be in your 30s, which, you know, there are no such things as rookies in their 30s. So, and he just kept coming back saying, Michael, this has always been a dream. Michael, this is the sport I love the most. Michael, my father just passed away and always said, you know, I might be the one person this decade that can do anything I want, and this is something I want. And so the other thing was, if you look at the Last Dance, I didn't even realize how tired he was after that third championship and how much pressure there was on him to get that three-peat, and that really there was not that much joy in that championship as there was in the first two. And then you combine that with his dad being killed. It's just like, okay, this could be the perfect storm. Oh, and by the way, the guy he plays for owns a baseball team. So, you know what, if I just want a break, you know, this might be the... It was very fun, though. And again, how many people can say they were Bo Jackson's legs and the guy that taught Michael Jordan how to catch and throw a baseball?
Maybe two on the face of the earth, but only one that we know of, for sure. To transition a little bit, to bring it up to the present, we were curious reading about how your careers progressed after baseball and how you got involved with the White Sox organization again. How did that all come to be, where you found your way back to Chicago?
Well, my father passed away when I was 22, so I didn't really have sort of a mentor. There was a lot of people that my dad had helped that stayed around the family, and as I was transitioning out or thinking about transitioning out of baseball, I do remember my dad saying, when you're ready to move on or graduate college or whatever, put the resume together, 100 close family friends, sit down with them and say, all right, you've known me forever, what do you think I'd be good at? Because he said to me, unlike and I had done a lot of things with the organization, even when I was with Toronto in the off season, because I stayed in Chicago. And I said, what do you think? And real estate was one of the two options I was considering. And he said, I think you'd be great in real estate. I made my millions in real estate. Here are some thoughts. So as I started to go down that path, we got together probably once a quarter for lunch, probably talked to him once a month, worked for a couple different jobs and the debt on the property management side and the transaction side. And my wife was from Dallas, big Southern Belle, and just kind of said, okay, if we're out of baseball, you know, we've lived in Chicago now for a number of years, do you mind if we move to my hometown for a number of years? And I was like, of course not. Our girls were still at that point middle school and an elementary school, kind of transitioning into high school and middle school, so I thought this could be the perfect time. So we moved to Texas, went to work for a company down there, Trammell Crowe. Was working for Jones Lang LaSalle, again, multinational companies, doing big transactions, having a lot of fun, actually making almost more money than I was playing baseball. And she unfortunately passed away. So even when I was down there, I was talking to Jerry on a regular basis. And when Camille passed away, I kind of was struggling. The girls were struggling. Clearly, I have three girls. At the time, they were high school, middle school, elementary school when my wife passed away. And Jerry was like, hey, look, I've got this pay it forward business up in Chicago. It started losing money. And as only Jerry could do, say, hey, your father was that college basketball player. So you know about basketball and you've got three girls. So you know about softball and you played professional baseball for me and you've been underwriting businesses for the last 10 years. Okay. Bull Sox training academies, you know, underwrite this and get it back to a break even. Don't need to make money with this, but just help me get it back to a break even. So he was the one that brought me back to Chicago and subsequently, you know, did a bunch of things, made a bunch of changes. And now it's just, I'm just in the baseball side with the White Sox. The basketball side is now with the Bulls. And it's been incredibly fulfilling, not realizing how much I knew about the game in terms of teaching, but also just, you know, the genuine desire to help parents and help kids just get better. And the life lessons of any team sport, for me, obviously I'm going to think of baseball more than football or basketball, but I mean, how many companies have an owner and the president, your 3-4 hitters, but how many companies have someone answering the phone or building a widget, HR department, 1, 2, 7, 8, 9 hitters? And if they're not doing their jobs, I don't care how smart your president is or how smart the, you know, the CEO is, the company's not going to be successful. And then where else do you have that great life lesson of you got to practice, 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 make phone calls, make phone calls, make phone calls to get a sale, And then sometimes you don't even get the sale. Well, in baseball, if you do nothing but go to a game, you're going to fail. And even if you practice and go to a game, you're still going to fail 3 out of 4 times, 7 out of 10 times. But just teaching the young kids, boys and girls, that, hey, if you stay after it, if you, practice, if you understand you've got to do these things to have a chance for success, great life lessons. And so for me, again, Jerry, as we all know, sometimes can be loyal to a fault. I feel like I'm one of those good people that has come across him that he has recognized as someone that can add value and put me in a position that I was able to do those things and add the value to Jerry. We're back to a break even, actually making a little bit of money. But that's how I came back to the White Sox, and just can't believe how much fun I've had doing this. And then being a former player, there's still times I get to go to the children's hospitals and be an ambassador for the club. There's still times they'll ask me to go, sign autographs at a store opening, which is always fun. Still kind of creepy. I still get cards literally every day with a self-addressed stamp envelope from people mailing me my baseball card saying, will you please sign it and mail it back? And I just look at these like, I'm 57. What are you people doing with your lives? Because I'm old. Get on to something else. Find some new younger players, which I hope they are doing their baseball cards as well. But again, seeing that young kid, it's still pretty fun and self-fulfilling to be able to give back. And then I'm typically writing notes. As people write the letter to me, I'm writing a note back just saying thank you, continue to, enjoy the game, maybe do these things or try these things. So it's been very fun and very fulfilling. And then the best part of the story is that getting back to Chicago, I was able to reconnect through my younger brother with my high school sweetheart, who had been divorced about 10 years and got remarried. And my three girls, her two girls, all get along incredibly well. And life, as much as it was a peak playing and then, down in the dumps with Camille passing away and stuff, I feel like I'm back sort of on top of the mountain right now. But thanks for asking.
And final question, I think, that we have here. I'm looking at the future of the White Sox organization and you being reacquainted with it. We've seen they haven't had a championship run since 2005, and we got some White Sox fans here as well. Joey and Leo are big Sox fans, as well as myself. But given the amount of talent that they've been able to bring in with Nick Madrigal, Luis Robert, and with the managing and the pitching staff, how confident do you think they are going on the right track towards getting another World Series title?
Great question. I think they're definitely on the right track because it's been proven. It's been proven by Kansas City. It's been proven by the Cubs. It's been proven by Houston. And so they're at that point now of taking these incredibly talented young men and hoping that the majority of them kind of pan out. And what we have found is that they haven't. There's been first-round draft choices like Carson Fulmer, who didn't quite make that transition from the best college pitcher to a great major league pitcher. But I think Rick Hahn has done a great job of bringing in some of the Latin players, like you're talking about, the Jose Abreus, the Luis Roberts of the world that the White Sox just went out and got. But then the trades, realizing, after, unfortunately, 6 months too late, after they traded Tatis Jr. to San Diego, when James Shields came back and the team struggled and didn't make the playoffs that year, that was when they said, we need to start all over again. Let's assume if the team didn't start off hot for the first month and a half and they make that trade, let's assume they started poorly, we would still have him on the roster with the Tim Andersons of the world. So you might be a little bit closer to that World Series. But all of the things that Rick has done with the pickups, with the trades, with the drafts, and I think most recently – we saw what Garrett Crochet can do and what he may be when you look at a guy that just consistently throws over 100. Andrew Vaughn, seeing him at spring training, could be one of the best pure hitters, a lot of people have ever seen. Nick Madrigal is just going to be the thorn in the side of so many people. And seeing how Tim Anderson has been able to elevate his game to true superstar status and take on the media pressure as well as just the playing pressure. And you have so many other great pieces from the trades. And now the arms, the hope is that the people like Michael Kopech, who will be back next year, may take a little bit of time to get back into form. But if he can, you know, everyone said he was supposed to be better than Lucas Giolito. Well, imagine if he becomes better. Everyone thought that literally Dane Dunning might have a bigger upside than Lucas Giolito. Well, let's see what happens to that. And then you don't worry so much about, you know, the Carlos Rodons or the Carson Fulmers or you know, those people. And the biggest question is going to be, you now have this team so on the edge of really a 3-4, maybe even 5-year run, who's going to be the manager? And can the White Sox find that Joe Maddon that the Cubs were able to? Again, so sad that it's unfortunate for Ricky Renteria, because Ricky is so good getting the kids to start to believe in themselves and understand what it takes to be successful in the major leagues. But again, Ricky, I think with the Cubs and with us, sometimes the moment overtakes him. And so how do we find that next manager that will help these kids get to that championship caliber? And then like the Cubs, like Houston, like the Dodgers, can I get there multiple times where one of those multiple times the stars will align and my guys will get the big hit or my guys will stay healthy and we'll win the World Series? So hopefully that answers the question.
Big thanks to Michael Huff for coming on, doing that interview. That was a great interview. He had a lot to say. Really cool that he trained Michael Jordan.
That is absolutely incredible. And that was, like you mentioned in the beginning, that was only maybe a third, if that, of all the stuff that we talked to him about. We talked to him about the White Sox, how they're doing now, and what brought him back to the organization. A bunch of cool stuff that's all going to be online when we post the podcast that's going to have the full interview. And honestly, even if you're listening right now, go back and listen to that full interview, because he has a lot of wisdom, and his story is just so cool. And it was such a pleasure talking to him.
That was, yeah, probably one of the most fun interviews I've ever done working at WZND, and it wouldn't have been possible without our very own Mitch Wads, who had that connection. He worked with Mr. Huff at the Bulls Sox Academy, and we found out that Mitch is our very own Dustin Pedroia. That was the comp that Michael gave him for how he was as a ball player here. So it's great that Mitch was able to make that happen for us.
Yeah, big thank you to both those guys.
Big thanks to them. It was a really nice treat getting to talk to Michael Huff. And speaking of which, WZND's Twisted Trick or Treat is reversing the roles and bringing a piece of Halloween to you. Listeners will have the opportunity to win a bag of candy and other swag that will be personally delivered right to your doorstep by our WZND team. There will only be 10 winners, so call in right now at 309-438-1033. Once again, that is 309-438-1033. This opportunity ends on Friday, so be sure to stay ahead of the curve by claiming your prize next week. And a huge thank you to our sponsor, Raider Family Farms, for making this giveaway possible. We'll take a break. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Red Bird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. That was a great interview we had with Michael Huff, but now we are going to talk about college football. Let's talk about college football. The Big Ten season is going on right now, or they're going to try and, or they're going to start this week. Big Ten football is finally going to be back. We saw a bunch of other different schools that we've seen, like the SEC and the ACC, but now the Big Ten is finally going to be back.
And you gotta love Big Ten football. Being from the Midwest, like that is when you're a kid on Saturdays, like that is what gets you going. Waking up in the morning, getting some Big Ten football. And I'm not even the biggest college football fan in the world, right? But there's something about just waking up in the morning and knowing that Iowa is playing Purdue and I'm going to watch like a 13-point football game and just getting hyped about it.
Yeah, speaking of Purdue, our current head coach Brock Spack went there, and he always brings up his playing days at Purdue and coaching. He was there, one of their defensive coaches, and got to know Drew Brees really well, which I think is cool.
Which is very, very cool. And, you know, using our connections, like for Michael Huff, maybe we could get Drew Brees on the show. Who knows?
I don't know.
But yeah, so the Big Ten, that's finally coming back, and I have not been more excited for college football in a long time.
And it should have been back earlier when ISU should have been playing U of I. That's a story for another time. They're going to open up against Wisconsin, so that should make for an interesting year. But with the Badgers, they're going to be without Jonathan Taylor, so who's going to be – how are they going to be able to run their offense now without that key guy in the backfield?
Exactly, and there are just so many questions about how – people are going to run, because the Wisconsin is not the only team that lost a really, really good player, either in their backfield or somewhere else on their offense. But I do want to throw it back real quick, just when you mentioned that Illinois and Illinois State were supposed to play this year. It only affirms my theory that Illinois is afraid to play us, because if they lose, they'll no longer be like the big brother school, you know? So, yeah. Like, I just think that they don't want it.
Yeah, I think the whole Big Ten waiting to start their seasons in November was an elaborate ploy so that the Illini didn't have to get beat by the Birds on their home field.
Exactly.
We all know that's true.
Exactly.
But looking at the rest of the Big Ten, it is just a weird situation where, so we have teams in the ACC or in the SEC that have played five, in some cases six games, and now the Big Ten is just starting their season now. What really is interesting to me is, how is this going to affect rankings? Do you put a one-win Ohio State team ahead of, you know, a 3-1 Georgia team? I think this is a problem we've never seen in college football, where you have teams that are going to be in completely different points of their season at the same time in the calendar year.
Yeah, you bring up a good point with that, because now with all these rankings trying to come into play, especially with the official rankings going to start coming out, I believe, in mid to late November, how's that going to work? Like, yeah, they're 1-0, but then a lot of people are probably going to have their opinions to say, like, oh, yeah, they're 1-0, but they beat a team that I've never heard of before, or that's because so-and-so, that team, didn't play this past week, so that's why they're number one.
And according to the AP poll right now, Ohio State is fifth, and Wisconsin comes in tied for 14th with North Carolina, having not even played a game.
Yeah, if I were one of those teams ranked below them, I'd certainly complain about this. And I think this is going to have major implications on the college football playoff, because we still have the Pac-12 that's going to start playing later in November. So it's just a very weird situation that college football really isn't on the same wavelength here with everybody going on at the same time. And I'm rooting for chaos for the college football playoff this year. I hope that we get, like, Alabama-Clemson, and then they just pull some random team that maybe everybody agrees shouldn't be in there, but's in there. I just hope there is chaos with the college football playoff, because that's why it's invented.
We get like a NC State Marshall.
That would be awesome.
Semifinal. That would be hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, maybe looking at, speaking of teams that might be in the playoff, one of the more interesting developments to come out of the whole COVID situation is we're finally getting Notre Dame in a conference. And so far, they've been able to handle that, being 4-0 so far. This will be interesting to see if this is something that will only be a one and done, or if they continue to do this so far, because obviously they're going to have to play Clemson. This could be the first time Clemson's had a real threat in their conference, in their Dabo Swinney run, and even with Trevor Lawrence here. So it'll be interesting to see how the ACC landscape changes now with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the fold.
And it is really interesting that the Fighting Irish would pick this year to join up in a conference, and I guess it's obviously just to get some games played and not waste this senior season that a lot of their guys have. But growing up, my dad's side of the family, a bunch of people went to Notre Dame, so I like kind of grew up watching Notre Dame games. And that was always a big point of pride, right, with Notre Dame
fans. Right.
They were always independent. And now with them in the ACC, that puts two ACC teams in the top three as far as the AP poll goes. And so that is maybe making a little bit of a transition to being more of a powerhouse conference, like we've seen the SEC be the past couple of years with Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point about it, because Notre Dame is one of those teams that historically has been performing really well, especially in the Lou Holtz era, and Brian Kelly's been doing a great job with this team. Ian Book probably going to be an NFL pick. But you mentioned it, like, with them not having a conference, they might not be seen as a threat too much, because then it's like, okay, you're independent, you're just going to play whoever. But now that they're going to be able to play in the ACC and compete against some of those harder schools like Clemson and facing Trevor Lawrence, then it's really going to get the committee like get their eyes open and be like, okay, this team could be legit.
And looking at it from Clemson's point of view, that's always the knock on them every year is they go 12-0, but they don't have to play the meat grinder that Alabama has to in the SEC, where you got to play LSU, Georgia, even like a team like Florida, where Clemson, it feels like they normally have an easier path to the national championship. So now that they're going to have to play Notre Dame at Notre Dame Stadium in a couple weeks, that's going to be huge for them and kind of asserting their legitimacy too.
And Leo, before we wrap it up here quick, I wanted to go back to the Big Ten because we were talking off air about some challengers that you see, because obviously Ohio State sits on the top of the throne as far as Big Ten football goes, but you were throwing some names out there who might just be like one step, two steps below, but with a weird season like this could have a great opportunity to kind of take that next step and take over the throne.
So the way I always look at the Big Ten is you have Ohio State, they're the top dog, they're going to be good year in and year out, but then you have that tier where it's everybody below, where you have Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State, Minnesota, and Michigan. Those teams all put together, they've been consistently 10-win teams the past few years, and they always feel like if they could just get the dice to roll their way for once, that they could be a playoff team. I think in a weird season like this, we maybe could see a team like that win. And the team I'm kind of very interested in is Minnesota. With P.J. Fleck in year three, I believe, they have been dominating the recruiting circuit in the Midwest here. They've been really doing well recruiting in Illinois, which is something that, you know, you never know because they're having good players coming out of Illinois. So they've been getting these players in the states that maybe Ohio State and Michigan haven't been winning and have been getting some pretty good 3-star, 4-star, in some cases, recruits. So obviously P.J. Fleck is building something, and this might be finally the year we start to see that coming together. So I'm most interested to see if Minnesota could be a challenger in the Big Ten.
Well, only time will tell as the Big Ten is going to officially kick off their season tomorrow night. And with everything going on, a lot of key players as well. But who do you think is going to win the Heisman Trophy this season? That's a Red Zone question of the week. Who do you think it's going to be? Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Spencer Rattler, or is it going to be someone else? We want to know your guess. If you do vote other, please comment below who you think it is. We would love to hear who you think it could be, because they are obviously a lot of underdogs that could be winning the trophy. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more football on the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZN.
This is Keyshawn Evans from Illinois State Men's Basketball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3
WZND. And welcome back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. And before we bring on Blake Hornstein and talk a little football, I have to wish a huge congratulations to Emma Lizio for winning one of WZND's Twisted Trick or Treat packages. We still have more prizes to give away, so keep listening for a chance to win one of our spooky baskets courtesy of Raider Family Farms. And without further ado, Freddie, what do you say we get into a little pigskin action?
I think so, yeah. You said it was a scary something scary, right?
Yeah, it's a spooky basket, yeah. Is what they say.
Yeah, but I think another thing that's spooky, this Bears defense
coming in
5-1, and big Bears fans here, but we got someone who's a cheesehead coming back on the show, Blake Hornstein from the News and Sports Department coming back on.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good, good.
Feeling good. Happy to have you on. It's always nice to have a little voice of dissent on, especially when you know the Bears are first in the NFC North now. So we're really speaking from the top of the pedestal down to the peasants who also exist in the NFC North that aren't from Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting about that, Joey, is to me, like, the Bears are a 5-1 team. They have they deserve some respect, but it's almost like saying the Cowboys are really a first place team. They've really only won two games. The Bears and the Packers each have one loss. You know what I'm saying? So if the Packers win this week, and theoretically the Bears didn't play, we're neck and neck, man.
Yeah, I respect you, Blake. I'm not ready to start throwing as much shade as Joey is because I'm still, I don't know, guys. I'm still not totally sold on the Bears yet. Just because it's been so up and down, it feels like last week's game was a good confidence builder, but it still felt like it was a game they should have won by more. But, boys, this defense is elite, yeah. And that's what's helping me stay confident. But, I don't know, it's just this offense. Yeah. It's the same story every year where I feel like they just left so many points on the board against a good Carolina team, but they should have maybe won that game by more.
Absolutely. And I think that this week, Monday night against the Rams, is going to be a huge prove-it game the Bears, because the Rams, aside from their tough loss against San Francisco last week, looked pretty decent all season. They looked like they've returned to form from when they went to the Super Bowl, and obviously with a little bit less of a running game. But still, they're a very decent team, and it'll be very interesting to see whether or not the Bears can keep up and kind of prove to everyone that, hey, we're legit. We deserve to be a one-loss team.
And I think as well with the offensive line, they're going to really need to step up, because I believe Aaron Donald, he's coming into this game without a sack this season, so he is hungry to take a quarterback down, and I'm sure he is more than willing to try and take down Nick Foles in any way, shape, or form that he can. So our offense has got to be ready to see where he's going to be on the field. If he's going to be blitzing, coming in somewhere else, be ready for Aaron Donald.
And I got to be honest with you, boys. I don't know if I trust good old Charles Leno or Bobby Massey to keep Aaron Donald out of the backfield. That's
no.
for sure.
And that's the thing with the Bears' offensive line is, this was such an area that they struggled in last year, and they really didn't do much to address it in the offseason, and this could be their Achilles heel moving forward. Is, you know, you need to protect Nick Foles and David Montgomery and everything, and I don't know if they did a good enough job in the offseason doing that. And we just saw James Daniels go down for the season, and he was one of the only bright spots on the offensive line. So I really think it is on Ryan Pace that he didn't address this need, and it might come back to bite the Bears later in the season.
You know, this is a very interesting matchup for me, because the Rams, in my opinion, have a similar situation in Chicago, in the sense that they still really haven't proven themselves. The Rams have four wins this season, right? All four wins coming against NFC East teams. Now, is that really like, you know, a big-time first-place team? Probably not. Well, they're in second. But the point being is that the Bears and the Rams each have a really big prove-it game upcoming this Monday, and I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I do. That's a good point you make, Blake, where both of these teams are kind of similar, where you both look, these were two of the up-and-coming teams in the 2018 season. We were talking about what great coaches Sean McVay and Matt Nagy are going to be, and it feels like they both kind of took steps backward last season, and now they're starting to figure it out again. So these are two teams that have been on similar trajectory, and I do think this is, for both teams, this is a are we sure they're good team litmus test, really, to see how legit they are.
And also, just transitioning quick to the number two team in the NFC North. Blake, the reason we had you on this week is because the Packers are no longer undefeated. They got absolutely pumped by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over this last week. And we were talking about it off air, but a very uncharacteristically bad performance from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't see Aaron Rodgers throw picks, let alone two picks and three throws. My goodness. Look, guys, the Packers failed to address their offensive line this offseason, and it's showing. I mean, losing Brian Bulaga and essentially not replacing him, when you go up against a great defensive line, that's what's going to happen. And this is a team that's really based on, this is an offense based on timing and precision and beating the defense before the play even happens. That did not happen on Sunday. And I'm very concerned on both sides of the ball. Defensively, you're paying Kenny Clark $18 million a year, Za'Darius Smith $16 million, and Preston $13 million, and you couldn't get a sack, all but two pressures. That's disappointing. I was very, very upset with the performance this week. I don't know if people were saying this was the best team in the league going into last week. I don't see it anymore. Are they the best team in the North? I still think so. Seattle might get Antonio Brown in a week or two, and I'm going to say that's your NFC favorite as of right now.
Yeah, you mentioned with the Seahawks trying to go with Antonio Brown. If he is able to actually play at the level he did play when he was succeeding with the Steelers, compare that with Metcalf and Lockett, whew, that is going to be a lot of ingredients for Russ to cook with.
That is very true, and even like you said, they've already got DK, who's a bona fide stud, and they've got Tyler Lockett, who has been Russ's favorite target for years, and to just add Antonio Brown, a guy who can play very effectively out of the slot, and we saw that a lot with his success in Pittsburgh, that makes just an incredibly potent offense that I don't think anybody in the NFC West, let alone the NFC, can even come close to. It has a lot of shades of the Kansas City Chiefs last year, except with a better running back in Chris Carson. And so if the Seahawks are able to do that, I think they're going to be a really, really dangerous team coming out of the NFC.
And that's a really good point you guys are making about the Seahawks. I think they're clearly the best team in the NFC. So they're going to be the team that gets the bye in the first round of the playoffs. But then this is why I'm doing my meatball Bears fan thing, where I'm thinking, well, really, nobody else in the NFC is at that level. Like, everybody else, you look at all the other division leaders, the Cowboys, Bears, Bucks, and obviously the Seahawks are legit, but everybody else, it feels like these are flawed teams that might do just well enough. So that's why I'm thinking, if the Bears or the Packers, in Blake's case, can put themselves in a good enough situation where you got to play a team from the NFC East in the playoffs, I could talk myself into either of these teams making a run, possibly all the way to the conference championship.
One thing that I do take solace in is the fact that the Bears and Packers are really shaping up to maybe have a first-round playoff matchup.
Oh, no. I don't know if I could handle that, just knowing the way the Bears have fared against the Packers in big games. We look at the 2011 NFC Championship. Still have nightmares about that one. And even the fabled Chris Conte game
to get into the
playoffs. Was that in 14 or 13? Doesn't really matter, but the Bears haven't had the Packers' number in elimination games, and I don't really want to see that team in the playoffs.
Well, I think one of the big things is in the NFL is not counting your chickens before they hatch. I was talking to Joey just a little bit before the show, and I said if the Bears win two out of the next three games, as a reminder, they play the Saints, the Titans, and then, of course, the Rams this Monday night. If they win two out of those next three games, I think that's a legitimate team. But let's not forget, one NFC North team 4 years ago, the Minnesota Vikings, went 5-0 to start the season and then finished 8-8. I want to see the Bears win two out of the next three games before we start talking about a Bears-Packers playoff game. I get the jitters just thinking about it, but I'd like to wait three more weeks before we start talking about that.
And you know what? That's fair. So before we got to wrap up and get to the pick six, one more thing we wanted you to address.
Oh, boy.
Coming on the show today,
Blake. Speaking of counting your eggs before they hatch.
So, Leo, if you would just play it for us real quick. This is Blake before the NFL season when he joined us on the Red Zone.
You know, every year we get on a hype train. Well, I'm getting on my hype horse. Denver's going to have the MVP this year. Drew Locke is going to break out.
Oh.
And so, Ferretti, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Blake say Drew Locke for MVP?
He did.
So, Blake, are you still on that Drew Locke high horse? Or hype horse? Hype horse, I'm sorry.
I think it's high horse. Because it's a Bronco. So he said high horse.
Oh, high horse.
First of all, guys, I just want to say props to you for getting the receipts on that one. That's pretty savvy. Listen, you know what? There was a trend going into the season of second-year QBs breaking out. I saw the Broncos as a team with a rising star quarterback with a bunch of weapons. Courtland Sutton played all but one game. Noah Fant's been hurt a lot. Their offensive line can't really block. That's why he got injured. Yes, I concede that was a terrible pick. Drew Locke is not going to be the MVP of the season. The hot take did not work for me in that case. It looks like that trend is going to be bucked this year because I see Russell Wilson taking home that award. But, hey, you know what? Drew Locke did win this week at Belichick. I give him some credit for that. And, hey, maybe the Broncos make a run down the stretch. But no MVP for Drew Locke. I was wrong. I concede that.
And I can definitely throw some respect on the pick, though, because when you do look at the Broncos' weapons coming into the season, Noah Fant is a solid tight end from Tight End University at the University of Iowa. You've got Courtland Sutton, who was an absolute animal last year and was on the trajectory to get even better. And then you had Melvin Gordon joining him in the backfield, who is a legit RB1 in that system with Phillip Lindsay to complement. So that offense did look very potent coming into the year, but just they've been riddled by injuries, and Vic Fangio is not meant to be a head coach in the NFL. And so they are just kind of screwed with a double-edged sword here with a team that's got pieces but not all the pieces that they need, and so they're struggling to develop this young quarterback a little bit.
Yeah, and you talk a little bit about Noah Fant. I initially had him on my fantasy team as one of my main tight ends, and then he just wasn't performing well, and I was looking to get rid of him, and I did eventually trade him. I got T. Higgins in that
Ooh,
deal.
Oh, that's a good deal.
I got T. Higgins, and
as of now, I won that because I put T. Higgins in. He exploded
just
for the, for the Bengals.
Just so the fans know, I don't know who is in Freddie's Fantasy League. Like, we're not in a league together. But whoever is in Freddie's Fantasy League, I hope you're listening. Do not trade with this man, because every time he comes into the studio, he's telling me, oh, I just got this trade. It is always the biggest finesse. Like, either Freddie has a way with words, or y'all are a bunch of dummies, because Freddie is getting these guys for literally nothing, like T. Higgins for Noah Fant. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So if you are in a fantasy league with Ferretti, please do not trade with him anymore, because he's going to screw you over. Just to heed my warning, please.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Joey, real quick. Just speaking about trades, I think you need to share with everyone tonight about what you
boy. Want
to.
Oh, boy.
So I obviously am not one to talk. I did, in my fantasy league, at one point I did have Davante Adams, Christian McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook all on my team at the same time.
Oh.
And I got impatient waiting for Davante and Christian McCaffrey to come back from injury, so I traded away all three.
Oh.
And that is my fault, and I will own that till the day I die, is that I'm not patient enough to wait for these guys to come off IR. But you know what? I Blake, you're absolutely right. You shouldn't throw stones if you live in a glass house. The great 50 Cent once said that. So, you know what, Freddie and anybody in his league, I'm sorry I got a little heated right there, but sometimes there's money on the line.
It's the same thing in my league, there's money on the line. I was in the exact opposite position with the Dalvin Cook thing, because I had Madison on my team, and they were saying, you know, just keep him on the bench until Cook gets hurt. So I'm like, well, Cook is performing well so far. So I drop Madison, and then 2 weeks later, Cook gets hurt. I'm like, man.
But Alex Maddie only had, like, 4.5 in PPR. So It was – you made the right choice there. I give you props for that one.
Yeah. And, well, that'll just about do it for our segment here. But Blake is going to stay with us when we come back for the break for the best segment in sports talk radio. And actually, the Buccaneers got one of these off of Aaron Rodgers last week. It's the Pick Six coming up here on the Red Zone on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. And welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. It is the moment we have all been waiting for. We love doing this segment every Thursday. It is the Pick Six. So the way this works, for those that may be tuning in for the first time, we basically pick six NFL games and we just choose the winners of them. If they win the game, we get a win. If they lose the game, we get a loss. And then the guest is, they're trying to make their way up to try and beat one of us on the show. But so far it hasn't been too exciting for them. They're still in last. Blake, I do have high hopes though you could come back, because the first time you were on, you started pick six, it was 2-4.
Yeah, well, you know, the guests are 17-19 on the year. I'm looking to get us back over 500, and Steve, I think you're up next on my list.
Oh, he just called out Seedster.
Oh, boy.
That's hot right there. Blake, you better watch your Twitter mentions. He goes crazy.
Oh, he'll probably come after him. Well, without further ado, let's get it going. We'll take a look at the first game. I mean, this is probably going to be the best game of the week, if I do have to say so. Thursday night football, the New York football Giants against the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, I was joking. This game, both these teams are struggling. I think the Eagles will pull it out somehow.
Yeah, even without Miles Sanders, I think the Eagles are still leaps and bounds above where the Giants are. And so it's going to be – I'm, like, not looking forward to watching this game tonight. It's going to be bad football, but the Eagles are going to win.
Yeah, you know, I know my parents are listening, so I might just say this. I think I'm going to do homework instead of watching Thursday Night Football tonight. All right, got some points there, but I'm going to go with the Eagles here.
Yeah, so here's an interesting stat. The Giants are the worst pass-blocking team in the NFL, no surprise there. The Eagles are the third-best pass-rushing team in the NFL. I don't think there's any much more to it. I got the Eagles tonight in the blowout.
And this is why we love Big Blakey Hornstein, because he comes in with the facts.
He is, and then that is going to be a clean sweep as Steve is also taking them. Before we get to the second game, just a quick update on the standings. As we mentioned, Guest is at the bottom, 17-19. Then Steve is in fourth, 21-15. I'm in third, 22-14. Joey, 23-13, and up top by one game. I think it was the Bears game that set it off. Leo, 24-12.
Feels good to be back on top, boys.
Congrats, Leo, for taking the top spot. I had a rough week. I wasn't in the studio last week. A little COVID scare, but we're back, and I'm coming for the throne.
Yeah, it looks like Aaron Rodgers didn't show up. All right.
Oh, sheesh.
All righty. Next one. This is going to be a big game, a battle of two undefeated teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Tennessee Titans. I've got Pittsburgh on my fantasy team, their defense. They showed up last week against Cleveland. It's going to be a good game. Ryan Tannehill's a really good quarterback. I think Pittsburgh will win it, though.
I have to disagree with you. I think Pittsburgh's defense is just a little bit too banged up right now to be relied upon to stop the absolute monster that is Derrick Henry. So I also think it's going to be close, but I think the Titans got the edge.
Fair. Yeah, I was really impressed with the Titans when they dismantled the Buffalo Bills on Tuesday Night Football. That was kind of the litmus test for them for me. I really believe in them now moving forward, so I'm also going with the Tennessee Titans here.
You know, guys, there are certain players, when they just get hot, get out of the way. And I cannot bet against Derrick Henry right now, by no means. Are we sure that Mike Vrabel's not a real Coach of the Year candidate here? And Ryan Tannehill, my goodness, top 10 QB, coming from Miami. He's made himself a home here in Tennessee. I love the Titans here. I think that they are, right now, maybe the most complete team in the NFL.
Alrighty, good pick. And Steve is going with the Steelers, so he's riding with me. We will see. And then we go to the next game that was shifted a little bit. They're going to play Sunday afternoon at 4:05. This game, it is the New England Patriots against the San Francisco 49ers. Both of these teams kind of banged up. The Niners more than the Patriots. I think New England at home with Cam going to get it done.
This is also a tough one where I don't know, because both these teams are in this kind of weird limbo spot where they're not good, but they're not bad. But I think with Jimmy G back for the Niners, and they looked pretty good against the Rams last week, and I think the Rams are a lot better than the Patriots, so I've got to go Niners on this one.
This was a tough one for me when I was looking at picks, because I feel like these are two teams that we really haven't seen them play with a complete roster for a long time, with just injuries and the COVID scare the Patriots had. I just think when it comes to injured teams or incomplete teams, you got to go with a better coach, and it's hard to beat Bill Belichick at Gillette Stadium. I'm going with the Patriots here.
Yeah, guys, I struggled with this game as well. I'm not a huge fan of either team. The Patriots showed some serious limitations offensively, and let's be honest, the Niners haven't had their great success on offense as well. But I'm going with the better roster here. I still think the Niners have far and away more talent on both sides of the ball than the Patriots. Give me Kyle Shanahan and Dirty Birds. Niners, sorry.
And Steve, he said, give me the New England Patriots with Bill Belichick. Next game we got is James Robinson's team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, against Justin Herbert and the struggling Los Angeles Chargers. Both of these teams do bring something different to the table, but I think the way the Chargers have been playing, especially with Justin Herbert calling the shots, it's going to be tough for them to lose this game. I'm going Chargers.
Okay, I didn't know where you were going with that. I was giving you a weird look. Yeah, because, I mean, we love James Robinson, obviously, former Redbird. We have loved the progress he's made in the NFL, but he is the only bright spot on this Jacksonville Jaguars team. They are awful on defense. And this is like going to be a college game for Justin Herbert. It's almost like he's back in Oregon with this college defense the Jags have. So, Chargers all the way.
Ooh. Yeah, while the Chargers are 1-4, all four of their losses have come by less than one score. So I think they've played some competitive teams. And losing to the Chiefs, Panthers, Bucks, and Saints, I really have been impressed with the progressions Justin Herbert's made. I'm going with the Chargers here.
Guys, James Robinson's our guy. Like, he's our alum, and he's killing it in the NFL. But James Robinson's not the whole team. The Jaguars are a dysfunctional mess. Heck no. Justin Herbert, my goodness. I mean, coming in the way that he did, how impressive has he been? Defensively, I'm not a huge fan of their defense. However, I think they're still the much better football team. They may be 1-4, but they'll be 2-4 after this week, Chargers.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. They are, even though they've been struggling, they almost won that game against the New Orleans Saints on Monday night. Steve's also going with the Chargers as a better team, so that's another sweep. Next one, this was going to be the Sunday night game, but it got moved due to some schedule changes in the NFL. It is Tom Brady and the Buccaneers against the Raiders.
Rumbling, tumbling, fumbling, Raiders.
The Raiders. And Tom Brady, he had a big game. Raiders think they're coming off a bye, but I tell you what, man. Love the way Derek Carr, man. He's playing Josh Jacobs. And tell you what, man, Hunter Renfro, he really impressed me there, man. I'm going Raiders. Knock on wood if you're with me, man.
I was going to pick the Bucks, but after that performance, I'm crossing it out on my sheet right now. We're going Raiders. I've never been more inspired. I feel like I got to run through a brick wall.
I always love it when John Gruden stops by the studio for the Red Zone, but unfortunately, I'm picking against him. I'm going to pick the Bucks here, boys.
I'll tell you what, Anthony Peretti, I've heard some tremendous John Gruden impressions on the internet, and yours might take the cake. That was amazing. However, the Raiders seem to be a byproduct of COVID. Their entire offensive line is on the reserve list right now. You can't win with that. The Buccaneers showed me what a great defense looks like last week, unfortunately. Just out of respect, I got to go Buccaneers.
Alrighty, Steve is going. I'll tell you what, man, he's going with the Raiders.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Then our final game, Monday Night Football. We got the Los Angeles Rams hosting the Bears. I doubted the Bears once. Not going to do it again. Bears.
That's my man. We're going Bears all the way.
Going with the Bears here again. Again, this is the prove-it game for them. This is where we see where they stack up. Hopefully, I'm not wrong here.
Right, to the Packers fan.
Well, this will be a classic regression to the mean game for the Chicago Bears. They've won 5 games by mostly the skin of their teeth. They will not win this week. They will suffer a loss to the Rams on Monday Night Football on ESPN.
Typical hater. Typical cheesehead hater.
Oh, boy. My
facts, bro. Come on.
Alrighty. Well, it looks like that will just about do it for this week's edition of the Red Zone. Just to recap, the myriad of things we talked about on the show opened up talking with Michael Huff, former MLB player and MLB outfielder, now the current director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox. Talked with him on his baseball career, his family, Michael Jordan, as well. Then we moved along, talked about college football. It's been going on with the Big Ten finally coming back this weekend, so hopefully big things are at stake there. Then we had news and sports guest Blake Hornstein on the show talking about the Bears and Packers and Drew Locke being the MVP. And then finally was the best segment in sports talk radio, the Pick Six. If you've missed any part of this show, remember that you will go on, it'll be online at WZNA.com with the interview. And for everyone here at the show, for Blake, for Leo, for Joey, I'm Anthony Ferretti saying so long. You've been listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 ZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.